The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/podshock. Over 85,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player.
Live from inside the Doctor's secret liquor cabinet, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 343. And if you stand that upside down, it comes to 343. This is Louis Trapani, and joining me on this lovely, long-awaited podcast episode is Mr. Dave Cooper across the Great Divide that we call the Atlantic Ocean. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Louis. But I think you need to restock the wine cupboard.
I do.
Ah, well, that's okay, then I'll stay.
All right. And jumping across the ocean again is Mr. Kyle Jones. Hello, Kyle.
Has anybody seen the brandy? I'm looking for some brandy. Has anybody been drinking brandy?
There's some missing in the cabinet somewhere, but we're not sure where it went to. All right, well, we're going to jump across another ocean all the way to New Zealand. No, wait a minute. He's not there. He once was there. Now he's in this little...
Now he's not all there.
Now he's not all there.
He's got my brandy.
He's in this little strip of land which he occupies along with Mickey Mouse and some others. Mr. Ian Bissett.
Sorry, I was just in the liquor cabinet. Brandy? No, I've never seen any.
Never.
I resemble that remark.
Well, welcome aboard, Mr. Ian Bissett.
Thank you.
I don't know why I'm being so formal today.
Don't mind if I do.
I get this vision of you in that tuxedo. There's a photo going on in social media floating around of Ian in a tuxedo and looks very Bondish. And so I want to say Bissett, Ian Bissett.
Exactly.
It's certainly better than the picture in the Bondage.
David, we see we weren't going to bring up your private collection. He photoshops me.
Well, into John Barrowman, what do you mind?
Not the right way, though.
And all I can say is I have seen that picture in real life.
Yes, you have. An address that's bigger on the inside.
There you go.
Yes. And it would have to be for John Barrowman. All right, well, let's not get too far into that. the first voice you heard in this episode and the last being introduced, but definitely not the least, is Mr. Lee Shackelford in the U.S. Hello, Lee.
Hi, I am here. I'm tuning in from the U.S. Yes, I'm here.
You are here. And I am there.
Exactly. And you are again?
I am the walrus.
Exactly. Goo, 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 joo. Yes, pick that right up on the recorder, Kyle. Yeah.
Oh, dear. I do believe I've found my recorder. I can talk about my recorder on this show. I'm so happy.
So those that are listening and wondering, what the...
Exactly.
What is going on here? This is this podcast that you used to listen to back in, mid-2000s through the 2010s, if we call them that, and then we sort of fell off the radar around Christmas time, or just before.
Is what it's come to.
Just before Thanksgiving, and here we are, on the cusp of spring, and we're back.
Well, that's always what happens when you you forget to prime the pump first.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, The prompt is now primed.
That's 10 points.
So I'm so glad to have you guys all back together. And we have a full TARDIS here. We have, you know, so many times we get around to recording and our schedules don't mesh. And that's another, you know, ratchet in the wrench in the gears here is getting our schedules all to mesh. But I'm so glad that we were all able to come together to as a full crew for this triumphant return of Doctor Who Podshock.
Yeah. Yay. Regenerated.
All right. Wow. Regenerated.
And it's not a moment too soon.
So we have a lot of ground to cover since it's been a while since the last recording, last episode that went out. So I guess we should jump into news, right?
Yeah. Ooh.
All right.
You first.
I'm first. Okay. Well, we.
You jump in first.
Oh, okay. Right. Right. Yeah.
Test it out.
Let me put my toe in the water.
Let us know how the water is.
Yeah, let me put my toe in first. All right. Well, it wouldn't be the news without a little typewriter action. Okay, we bring you to the Doctor Who news desk, and here is Marty McGruff. I don't know.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm not the news reader. I'm just cleaning the desk.
So...
Yeah, Dave may have to explain this one because it was a surprise to all the rest of us.
It's news for not only for perhaps you, our listeners, though I'm sure our listeners probably already know about it, but it was actually news for me, news for Lee, and
news for Kyle.
For Kyle. And I can't speak for Ian, but perhaps, I don't know. But so, Dave, tell us about this.
Well, yeah, it's from DoctorWhoNews.net. It's the... this was announced in early February of this year, the Enemy of the World Special Edition. Now, of course, on Podshock, we covered those two back-to-back episodes, Web of Fear and Enemy of the World, and I think we rated them really highly. And so it's getting some special treatment. The BBC has announced that they're releasing a recovered and restored Classic Who Adventure, the special DVD, The Enemy of the World. You can find the information on, as I say, the DoctorWhoNews.net site. The standard DVD story was released early in 2014, and the special version has been remastered, and there's a number of extra features. Remastered episodes. So even though all the episodes were restored for the previous DVD release, Peter Crocker from the restoration team is using advances in technology since then to go over with a fine-tooth comb and ensure that they're now presented in the best possible quality for this special edition. And there's also other aspects to it. So it looks as though it's going to be an actual worthwhile addition to those completists of all the DVDs. Remember, it was only a year or two back that we were saying, well, there's no more Doctor Who to release on DVD from the classic series. But then, as we said, we got the Web of Fear and so on and this. And then we've had a couple of new episodes now where money has been spent on where there's been a single missing episode or whatever, they've done an animated version. But Shada, which, of course, has not only gone out, and that is available now, certainly here in the UK, on Blu-ray. But that's the nub of the story. It was going to be released on March the 19th. Now, I'm not quite sure what day today it is, but I think that means it's going to be released in about 3 days' time.
It's the 16th as we record this. As you're listening to it, it must be about May 30th. No, I'm hoping it goes out. I hope the podcast goes out sooner than that. But yeah.
But for Dave, I bet it's already the 17th.
It's probably top of the day to you, Dave.
St. Patrick's Day to you.
That's right. Waiting for the sunrise on St. Patrick's.
And my nephew.
No wonder he's so liquored up.
And my nephew Patrick, named after the day, it's his 50th birthday. So, hi, Patrick, if you're listening.
Cheers.
Wow. And if you're not, none of the stuff, he never told us about that stuff, honest.
Yeah, I long for a tall glass of Mandarin orange around this time of the day.
Yep, and that'll be all I want of them, and it'll be perfect.
I suppose this is the first time that an episode has been considered lost, has been found, and then it has been found again. Is that... Because I thought the sort of the resuscitation of regeneration of Enemy of the World was quite nice. So it's going to be interesting to see what this remastered version from...
I don't know. I think that they were pushed to get it out, because I remember they released it. I think they released it digitally first.
They did. So it was 2013 when it was originally restored. And I can't believe it's 2018. Right. This is 5 years now.
I know.
This feels like it just came out recently. Like, I mean, I can't believe it's already half a decade.
Yeah. They kind of announced it, and then it became available.
It was like, wasn't it October? I think it was the release.
Yeah, it was right before the 50th.
Yeah.
That's probably what has been going on here. It was just like, we just piece it all together and let's throw it out there, you know.
Now do it properly.
Yeah, well, and then I'll, yeah.
And it was also complicated by the Web of Fear story, because when we were all looking forward to seeing the first appearance of the Brigadier, and that ended up having to be an animated version, because an episode they thought they got then went re-missing. So the two stories together have both had a little bit of a checkered path to being available.
And
makes it a little more interesting.
Since we're speaking of years, for those that may be not familiar with the story and the episode, this was actually released originally December 1967. It's a serial that ran through January. The end of January 1968, it's a second Doctor story starring Patrick Troughton, in which he plays
two characters.
Yeah, I was just going to say, which he plays dual roles in. And it was a lost episode that was then up until, I'm not sure exactly when obviously it was recovered and restored in 2013. We just said that, but I'm not sure exactly when it was all found and initially. So yeah, it was a great treat to finally see it in its entirety. And when it was restored back in 2013, it was originally released on iTunes and maybe other streaming media sources. I don't recall. I got mine from iTunes. And then the following year, it was released on DVD. And now it's being released again, which is painful for those that purchased it originally, because now we have to purchase it again. And it's fitting that's called the special edition, because it walks back down to Star Wars with all the different releases of that, and everything. Yeah, and any longtime Star Wars fan has bought it over and over and over and over again.
It's true.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to this. We don't now. This is a UK Region 2 release. We don't know anything about a Region 1 timetable.
Not that I'm seeing at the moment, no.
But isn't it usually 3 to 4 to sometimes 6 months after, on average?
Yeah, so now, which is interesting, because now isn't, speaking of another similar release of a missing episode, there was, and we were just talking about this before we began recording, and we're going to go to the namesake of Lee here, his online namesake, Professor Chronotis. We just had the Shatter was re-released again, and that was released in the UK, but still it's not until later this year, I think September, if I'm not mistaken, that it's getting released in the US.
The other information I've got about this episode is that it did actually star Enemy of the World, one of my favourite actors in the UK called Colin Douglas, who also was in the horror Fang Rock, but he was also in lots of other stuff on BBC. But one of these journeyman actors in the UK. And I say this because I know that Lee has always been interested in the fact that... you get these recurring actors from the UK, and I think some people in the UK think, are there only 6 actors in the UK?
Cause that's the joke over here. There's only 20. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a smaller pool. It's a smaller country, I guess. Smaller pool of, but the acting is that much more prolific and intense that it can accommodate that. It's always one. It's always interesting, the long history of Doctor Who, when you do come across a prolific actor that's, you know, in the UK that's been around for a while, and it hasn't, and that he or she hasn't crossed paths with Doctor Who yet. It's that's what always is surprising when you find someone that hasn't been on it.
Well, Ian and myself have this running joke. They're either in Doctor Who or on Casualty.
Yeah. Usually most if they've appeared in one, they've appeared in the other. So whenever we do our famous commentaries, it's always a kind of a game to when you come across a, you know, somebody who's been in both, we do a scan and see what other stuff you may have seen people in.
That's right. So. Oh, it seemed to me for a long time that everybody who was on the classic series was also on Zedcars.
Yeah, that's another one that comes up a lot.
And of course, Blake 7. I remember watching Blake 7 first time back, you know, when it was released on PBS in the 80s. I'm like, oh, I remember him from Doctor Who. I remember this one from Doctor Who. And didn't he play so-and-so? And of course, Colin Baker was in it as well.
Yes.
True.
Babin...
Babin the Butcher.
Babin the Butcher.
Yes, so he was like very...
like a Dune-ish character. Like, he seemed like a character in Dune.
He's very cool. A really good performance. He's just so arch, you know, and rough and tough. Anyway, I'm just going to be in the corner.
Down.
I told you about the brandy.
Right. I'm onto the whiskey now.
I had a nip at the brandy. Well, this may be jumping ahead on our list, but I guess it makes sense to talk about the fact that BBC Worldwide is also releasing the whole first year of the Fourth Doctor.
Yeah, now this is interesting.
Has cleaned up Blu-ray and everything. That's going to be in June. Two different dates for the UK and the US release. And I was just looking at the
specs. But at least they're close together. At least it's not months apart. Yeah,
it's two weeks. Yeah. But there was a rumor going around that they had sort of done like CBS did with the original Star Trek series, that it was going to be the first year of Tom Baker with all new special effects. And apparently that is true for Revenge of the Cybermen.
And I'm seeing here it says immersive 5.1 surround sound mixes for Ark in Space and Genesis of the Daleks, but not so it's not all the stories.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't say anything about aspect ratio, does it?
I was just about to say, and before we go, we need to consult Dave on the...
Yeah, I would hope it's the original aspect ratio.
Yeah, it's going to be 133, like, yeah.
So, Dave, what are you up to now? 5K, 12K, 8K?
I've got a 4K, but I'm going to have to upgrade it soon because one transmission start. Yeah, no. Well, I'd love one of those, but they're going to what's called hybrid log gamma, which is a one-pass system for live-action programs. Because most of the stuff that comes on Ultra HD has been processed and done, you know, more than once to get the best out of it. But when you're doing live stream TV, it has to be done in one. So they use something called hybrid log gamma. But going back to this,
I love how passionate Dave is about this, even though I don't understand half.
I enjoy it. Yeah,
it's just like he just goes, and it's just like
there you go. And I'm afraid, as tech savvy as I am, what I heard was the grown-up's voice on the Peanuts specials. I just Dave just said, wah, 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 wah.
Well, no, actually, I read Lucy's script, and it said, techno babble here.
Insert technical babble here, yeah.
And well done.
And all I really need to know is... if Dave's awake or not, because if I see a TV I like, I send him the link. I say, is this good?
And then he replies back.
If I get the thumbs up, emoji, I'm set.
No, I said, it's only 8-bit color that you want, 10-bit color.
That's right, there you go.
It's just such an odd thing. It's that blind spot in technology. I just, I mean, I know what looks pretty. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what makes it look pretty.
So he wants something that Rachel Riley looks good on. That's what he wants.
So to steer the technical battle back to the topic at hand here.
So meanwhile,
it is a Blu-ray release. So those listeners may be saying to themselves, well, why have a Blu-ray release of something that was shot in standard video, which is not going to be a high definition? So some of the benefits is that it's going to be upscaled for your HD, or it's already doing the upscaling for you, so that you're going to get the best possible rendition of that standard definition original upscale to your HD output, you know, on this Blu-ray. Isn't that right, Dave?
Can I do a Kyle here? Can I ask you a question?
Oh, that was good. I like that.
Which was the first Doctor Who episode to be broadcast in HD?
So it was not Christopher Eccleston's run.
It was one of the specials,
David Tennant specials. There was a bus in it.
Yeah, wasn't the Easter one? That was I forget what it was called, but it came out around Easter time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Came warm.
Yep.
Sandbags. Yeah.
It had a
you never know till you push over a boulder.
Well done.
10 points. It's a close game, folks.
Yep, that one. Oh, you actually want the name? You actually want us to blurt out the name?
I can never remember the name of that.
Yeah, he's getting picky in his old age.
I can't remember names. I reached the point in my life where I don't remember names anymore. I just say, what's his face? Oh, you remember that one, yeah.
Waters of Mars.
No.
There's a lot of sand in it.
Yeah, right. With the insects and the fly heads, and...
Yes.
You're saying there's no sand on Mars?
And that young lady with the dark, fabulous name.
Yeah, the dark outfit and... Talk
hair. Lady somebody.
Yeah, I call them all the something of the something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Planet of the Dead or something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Planet of the Dead.
And that was the 11th of April 2009. Good heavens, 9 years ago.
Though, that's not the earliest Doctor Who that was released in HD. Because then we have...
Broadcast.
Broadcast. I'll give you a broadcast. But then the earliest created story, at least in discounting the Hartnell discounting the Peter Cushing movies, the Spearhead from Space,
Because it was an all-filmed episode.
They didn't... back then they were mixing... Ooh. Video and film, and in that one that was all film, so they were able to release that on Blu-ray, and since it was film, they could release it in HD.
They could rescan the negative,
It really is amazing, some of the upscaling that they're doing now. I just bought iClaudius, the BBC iClaudius.
Wonderful.
And that's about the same time as this first season of Tom Baker, of course. And it's gorgeous. I just can't believe it. And I know what the original video signal looked like.
Yeah.
But it really looks like, I don't know, you could step through your TV set and be in ancient Rome. But
let all the poisons in the mire hatch out.
Exactly. Yes. Wow. A serpent once bit Livia, and it died. I'm looking at the box art for this collection here and noticing that it has
the new logo. Which is kind of odd because if you go back one page back to where we were before with the release of the Enemy of the World, it does not have the new logo.
As the good old John Pertwee logo,
It's a bit. Do you think that's the right thing to do?
So I would have prefer. I mean, we're going to talk about the new logo in a moment. I don't have any objections to the new logo, but I just feel like it should be the diamond logo for Tom Baker. Just as each doctor has, I think it's great that the logo sort of regenerates with the doctor sometimes, or not always,
But from time to time, it does change.
It does change. So, But I sort of like the way, you know, if you release like maybe a William Hartnell story, it should have like the William Hartnell style logo. If you release a Peter Davison story, it should have like the neon logo, you know, and it should be like fitting to that era. You know, and but whatever, I guess.
So don't you suppose that what they're doing here is they're saying, if you love the 13th Doctor, you know, next year you're going to be saying, "Ooh, I want more of this." Then you go to your, you get online, you go to your store where they sell videos, and you see this box, and it has the same logo on it. Ooh, this is more Doctor Who.
Yeah, it looks as though it's sanitizing it or rewriting history, though, putting that logo on it.
Yeah, I agree. I see the marketing sense of it, but yeah, I want the diamond logo on this.
Yeah, I want the diamond as well.
I mean, marketing-wise, it's like, and it screams from the shelf, look at me, I'm new.
This is new.
It's like, it could be a repackaged, you know, David Tennant Sonic screwdriver, but especially the kids, it's got to be new, because that's the new logo. It's like, it's perfect marketing. It's like,
And, you know, speaking of marketing,
make money off this show.
But, you know, with marketing, I think it kind of, when we have a show that has been around 55 years and marketing trends change, you may have one, you know, set of merchandise where they use whatever the logo is from that time. Then you may 10 years later have, oh, well, let's do like we were saying just a moment ago, go back and use, as Lewis said, whatever doctor you're talking about, have that doctor's logo. So I think, you know, as we see marketing trends come and go, so do how they use the logo come and go, perhaps.
Here's another spin on it, though, is it also, in a way, changing the logo appeals to our geek sensibilities. Because we're the kind of people who will find an old Target book, Target novelization, which had the wrong cover on it. Or this is when they changed from this cover to that cover. We're geared in that direction where, you know, if it's different, it's part of the history of your show and needs representation in whatever it is you collect. That kind of, like when they changed the Daleks, you know, even if it was a mistake for Stephen Moffat to do it, I'm sure they made more than that back in merchandising, because they had a brand new Dalek that they could sell. And just because the fans don't like it, hey, we're going to get it because we're like, can you believe this? And you buy it. And you're like, because we've got that mindset, you know, so... I think they're onto us.
Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to take you. Actually,
we don't see the Skittles Daleks anymore, do we?
But you know what? Let me take you in another avenue, right off of what you just said, Ian. Now that they are so, you know, we don't even see those Daleks again. That just made the merchandising of whatever they created so much more
valuable,
sought after, and valuable. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
it's the Edsel of Daleks.
Hopefully the show will in some way, shape, or form be around 50 years from now, and that's going to be a huge collector's item.
That's right.
One of the Skittle Daleks. Yeah. And there'll be a little history card that, you know, you'll buy it on whatever version of eBay they have. You'll be like, this is when the one called Stephen Moffat lost his mind. Sorry.
It's interesting they're calling this DVD the collection season 12, and because I wonder if I mean, for us that sounds, you know, appropriate, you know, but I was wondering for those newer fans if that might, you know, since they're using the new logo, what season are we, or series are we in now? Didn't we just finish
11?
We're about to 11. Yeah.
Yeah. And now they're using the new logo and they're calling it season 12.
Yeah, they're hoping all the aunties will be buying it for the nephews and buy it by mistake.
And
well, it is a time travel show. You get to watch 12 before you watch 11.
Yeah.
Whoosh.
And it also describes the Genesis of Daleks omnibus movie version, unseen since broadcast in 1975. But I'm wondering if it's any, if that's because I, in the Northeast here, there's in, I'm in New York, but there's a there's a New Jersey network in the next state over, New Jersey. Back in the 80s, they used to show all the those classic Doctor Who's, not in serial format, but in movie format. And I'm wondering if that's, if it's anything different than what they showed, you know, back in the day, back in the 80s, when they were showing it on PBS. On NJN, that New Jersey network, if it's the same version or not.
I wondered that too, because that's how I saw Genesis of the Daleks the first time.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps this means in the UK it was never shown.
Yeah,
that.
That's why I'm wondering if that's the distinction.
Yeah.
All right. Well, once again, I have them all on DVD, but I'll have to buy it again.
Here you go.
So
it is Star Wars.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of that gag from Men in Black when they're going through a little alien doodads, and he's like, this can hold X amount of music. And he goes, guess I'll have to buy the White Album again.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, I mean, I've got so many versions of, I think every iteration of Back to the Future. I've had a VHS, DVD, DVD special edition, Blu-ray, 25th anniversary Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, upstairs in the loft, I've got a laser disc of Star Wars.
Well, I had the lasers as well. VHS, lasers, I had them all, yeah.
So, and, I don't think I've ever had the lasers.
And now, speaking of which, Disney is not allowing iTunes. So, in getting movies in general, if you bought a movie, a 1080p movie in iTunes, and now you have the latest, let's say Apple TV that does 4K, automatically Apple upgrades all your 1080p movies to 4K. But Disney won't allow that because Disney wants to get extra money because Apple's charging the same cost for 1080p as it is for 4K. And so now if you buy The Last Jedi on iTunes, you won't get it in 4K because Disney won't allow it. So evidently, if you buy it, you might have to buy it again when Disney just, if it succumbs and releases it in a higher price format. But
well, if you're talking about things like that here in the UK, there's another thing happening with the BBC iPlayer because they want to make that another thing like Netflix and Amazon. Whatever. Yeah. At the moment, there's 9 series of Doctor Who and lots of British TV on the BBC iPlayer. At the end of this month, March, they're all coming off UK Netflix. So if anybody's listening to this from in the UK, watch Doctor Who on Netflix, because at the end of March, it's all coming off because BBC wants to realign the BBC iPlayer into a proper streaming service. Obviously, the people in the UK have paid for their license fee, should get it free, but they want to make it a subscription service for other countries. This has been coming for about 18 months now, but the fact that they're taking the content off Netflix, or their agreement with Netflix is coming to an end, is showing how serious they are being about, getting money from the back catalogue. I mean, the BBC has a fantastic back catalogue of stuff.
I have to wonder whether this has anything to do with BritBox. I wonder if, in the UK, the iPlayer will kind of switch to BritBox, but be, the iPlayer on the outside to you. Because the only problem is BritBox is actually, I think it's the BBC and ITV.
Right, you're right.
Owned and operated. It's a co-venture. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how that would work then. But it just seems odd for them to kind of launch the iPlayer as a streaming service when they could offer it to, the US market too. But you've already got BritBox out there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And just from the idea that they have, you know, kept the iPlayer behind the, you know, firewall if you're in the UK or not in the UK, I think from a we were talking marketing earlier, from a marketing perspective, think about how many people in America would just jump at the idea to finally say, oh, cool, I've got iPlayer now.
Right. And I mean, streaming wise, especially with, I mean, I think Hulu has started doing like broadcast streaming where you can get a channel in your streaming package, you know, and so you can actually watch a channel live broadcast. And so, I mean, I see that would be a great opportunity because that means, you know, like BBC especially would get the jump on the US market in having its own content, you know, at time of broadcast. So I could see the latest episode of Red Dwarf and Doctor Who before the US market, you know, channels and streaming services can get their foot in the door, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a thing. I mean, this article I'm reading now, it says BBC reaches its centenary year in 2022, at which point Mr. Hall says he wants the BBC that is irresistible to all audiences. And they want to make it, you know, one of the main streaming services out there. Because there's the threat that the UK government will withdraw its support, you see.
Right. I mean, I could see, I mean, I think now more than ever, especially with, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon giving us access to each other's content, that you've got a lot more Anglophiles out there than ever before, you know. Especially even PBS, too, has become a lot more popular. And you get a lot of British shows invading the US, you know. So it's not the niche market it used to be, you know. It's quite common for, you know, Call the Midwife, for example. A lot of people over here, you know, you just hear it in regular conversation. And so it used to be odd if you managed to get hold of a show that was made in the UK that nobody else could really see, you know. Now everybody can see it.
Yep. I mean, I think we can debate this too long, but we perhaps ought to move on.
Yeah.
I thought we were just going to do news and then maybe have some chips and dip and put our feet up.
I'm all for the chips and dips. Don't forget the whips.
So I have a question for you guys. You know, I piggybacking off of, I guess this is my phrase tonight, piggybacking, but, you know, taking off of something that Dave said earlier, I have a question for you guys. What do you think of the logo, the new logo, and not only that, how the new Doctor, the 13th Doctor, is shown to have the ensemble that mm-hmm. she will be wearing? Curious.
Very good question. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoy the new logo. I think it's sleek, it's elegant. It's not completely, you know, it seems a little familiar, and I'm not exactly sure how and why, but it does have a familiar feel to it.
Mm. I think you're right. I think they've gone for a very clean cut, almost sort of let's divest ourselves of some of the history and be forward looking. But I think I've had a slight conversation with Kyle on this before, that although I quite like this new incarnation's outfit, actually seeing the odd image of the dress in motion, I'm not quite so happy with it, especially the blue trousers, yeah. The cropped blue trousers.
Well, the flood,
they look a little yeah. bit. They just.
That's the thing that, you know, that's the thing that really, you know, sticks in my core, if you will, is that I don't have a problem with the outfit except for those those blue trousers. I think are just awful, you know, and I don't know where the flood is coming, but she's ready for it.
I mean, take me right back to the 80s and Bay City Rollers and and short, you know. And I'm not really a fan of the stripe across the
it's a little
the chest
Mork
there.
And Mindy. It's a little Mork and Mork.
But I love the coat. I must admit, I love the coat.
Yeah, there was. I remember there was some confusion about the color of the coat because on some editions it looked brown and others it was blue and or like violet and so.
And cosplayers want to know.
Yeah, cosplayers want to know
exactly.
Well, I thought it was two colors of coffee, like a lighter colored in the shoulders and then there's some piping on it. But in a static pose, the outfit looks great, but it doesn't walk well.
No. And Lee, I don't know if it were you or if it was Clarence that said the shoes just look weird and uncomfortable.
Clarence is really bugged by the boots, and they didn't stick out of my mind until we got the new logo reveal that also had a graphic silhouette. Yeah. And in the silhouette, I think the boots look really clunky and I don't understand them. Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the images that's been leaked or released from their shooting of the first episode shows her what looks like she's rummaging through a dumpster. And I'm still wearing Peter Capaldi's outfits.
Maybe that's where she gets this from.
that's what I'm wondering. I thought, please tell me that this is coming out of the dumpster. But
that would make all sense. Yeah.
But and maybe another virus.
Maybe this won't be prolonged. Maybe not. Well, I mean, because maybe she'll change it. You know, a couple episodes in. You know, who knows? I don't know.
Right. She's supposed to steal her clothes from a hospital like everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. I always have that vision of Pertwee, yeah.
When did Podchuck turn into
a fashion?
Doctor Who Project Runway.
This week on Doctor Who Project Runway.
Feels like it's standing up on a catwalk and it's like, well, no, the shoulders have got to go.
Exactly. I don't like the silhouette of those boots. That's true.
There's some daft program they're promoting in the UK now, and it's like four gay guys give a straight guy advice on how to dress. We're getting very much sounding like that.
Queer Eye for the Straight Eye. That was that's an old show.
Yeah,
you have to watch that. Actually, it's good stuff.
Yeah, that's actually been revived. That's a yeah.
Yeah, oh, both shows are great, actually.
Oh, I'm pointing, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Queer Eye is back, and it's pretty damn awesome. I liked the only thing I didn't like is there weren't enough episodes. They only released, like, six episodes. And that is just not enough. We need more.
Yes. Many of us still need the help. We still need the guidance.
Yes.
So are we ready to talk about your minds?
Yeah, come on, Lee, keep going.
Are we ready to talk about Peter Miles? I'll just keep saying Peter Miles until
he dies again.
Let's talk about Peter Miles.
Let's do. Yeah, and I know he was on the classic series three times. It's sort of three great episodes, but you know he's always
iconic.
Snyder. Yes,
yeah. Iconic role is Snyder.
Yeah, and but you know, talk about a good long run. He was 89. Bless him, but. Yeah.
So for those that may be scratching the head, Nida is a Nida is a character from the classic story, which ties into the box set that we were talking about before, the Blu-ray.
That's right. You'll see him in that box.
Bringing it all together, yes. Genesis of the Daleks. He played and this is and this story, Genesis of the Daleks, tells the origin of the Daleks, and it really puts a really, you know, molds it into the realm of Nazi Germany and how the Daleks really came from that culture that is very mirrors what Nazi Germany was, and Ida plays this officer that is very much like a Nazi commander, but he's you know, in this regiment.
He's supposed to be a scientist.
Yeah,
well, the casting is beautiful because he looked like Heinrich Himmler, and if you don't quite get the parallel, then whenever we go in for a close-up of him, you'll notice he's wearing an Iron Cross, which is
interesting,
a little on the nose, but yeah.
But don't know, for just being on Doctor Who, it is a really good performance. You know, sometimes you get the bad guy who pretends to be nice and it's all a bit fake. There was a, you know, I don't know, played it with a, for what it was, an amount of realism that sometimes you don't find in, you know, long-running series. You know.
That's right. He's not just a melodrama villain here. He's we understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. I mean, we've long had this discussion about, you know, Doctor Who's not really adult drama, right. But he's playing it as an actor would do in an adult drama.
Right. It's a really good performance. Yeah. Which, considering he's talking to a man, you know, in a rubber head, you know, who trundles along beside him in what looks like a souped-up wheelchair. And you can still get out of a performance like that, you know.
Kidding, yeah. That's what you got to do, so.
Yep, you get to pound the pavement, do the job, you know.
A long and storied career, so do you... Peter Miles, you were appreciated.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
What was that?
A joke that only makes sense if you know Genesis of the Daleks.
It's just weird when you hear Lewis scream it in your ear. Unexpectedly. Because we had just reached this natural conclusion to the conversation.
That's why I thought it was fitting just to do it right at that point.
It's perfect delivery.
Do you suppose anybody's listening to this still?
No, I'm sure they're almost losing. You know, we're
twice upon a time.
I like the new logo. It's very appealing. I think, you know, I have to agree. The stripped down feel of it. It was very thin. It's not kind of big, bold, and which some of the previous ones have been, you know.
Look at the Ninth Doctors. Well, it's Ninth and Tenth.
Yeah.
They had it had the big, you know, the graphic shape behind it, but it was still thin.
Right.
But it also has this, like, it looks like a something that's shooting through it. You know, if you look at a close-up of the logo, it's like a flare or an asteroid or something that's, like, breaking through the letters. And it's not just an element of the font itself. It's something that's cutting through the letters, almost like maybe the TARDIS, like or the vortex, or just, like, went through those letters.
Like they do these bullets through these smoke machines.
In movies, Bullet Time, when you have that slow-motion bullet, and you see the ripples in the air and that type of thing.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is this: when this new logo was released, there was also a video that was about 30 seconds, 25 seconds?
Yes.
Of... some interesting music and, you know, this background, you know, graphics and stuff. But then I heard afterwards that that's not, you know, anything to do with the opening theme or anything.
It's not,
you know, that's not the music they're going with, and that's not the... But it's why would you go to all that bother? Because I actually kind of liked it. There was something an 80s kind of quality, retro quality to some of the background and the music, if that makes any sense. And just this kind of, and then the feeling I got from the graphic stuff that they did, it almost seemed a bit Discovery like, even though Discovery's is done like a sketch. This seemed to be kind of similar in style to that. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like, if that's not what they're doing for the actual show, then don't do this to me.
But you've thrown
Sorry.
I was saying you've thrown a new element in there because you mentioned music, and of course we now know that Murray Gold will not be featured in the next series as well. So that's going to be a whole new element.
That's right.
Well, yeah, I'm not happy about that. Just FYI.
Well, as much as I love Murray Gold, it'd be nice to hear a new take on music on Doctor Who. I mean,
True. I got to give it.
Yeah, he started to revisit themes, hasn't he?
Well, I think he did that because it was his last episode.
Yeah. Darth was saying on our call, he said, I don't know what Murray's going, he's throwing the kitchen sink at it. And Ian himself was saying, well, he's making sure his copyright's right up to date before he finishes.
Yep, just throw them all in. Yeah, I've been burned like this before, though. That's why I'm very, very on edge about it. They did this with Enterprise at the end of, I think it was the last episode of Star Trek Voyager. It was the only time there was going to be no Star Trek on air is between Voyager and when Enterprise started. But they had this like little preview clip. And they had a song on there. And so everyone assumed, well, everyone I knew, assumed that that's what the theme music was going to be. Nope. They had a whole new song written for it. And it's just like, no, I've been humming that tune since you showed me it. Don't do this. Especially since I liked what I saw. I was like, yeah, this is what I want. So we'll see what we get.
Sometimes the music isn't ready at the time when they're previewing something and they put something else in. They do that with movie trailers too sometimes. They'll take music from something else and put it in there, and then the actual music may not be up to par.
Right. Score is typically the last element to come into the mix,
In fact, I think, when we think of 2001 A Space Odyssey, we always think of the music that's attached to it. And if I recall correctly, and I could be misremembering or wrong with that, I think that wasn't intentional. I think when they were first putting together, like, what the movie's going to be or a trailer or something like that, they needed some music to put on it, and they didn't have the music composed yet. And they took existing music, classical music, and put it on it, and then it rang so true to what they were doing. That's actually what they did.
Yeah, Kubrick used all that music as a placeholder track, as a guidance for the composer, and then decided, no, I like it this way. So that's what happened.
Well, it happens in other franchises. I mean, like John Williams, he wasn't going to do any more Star Wars, The Last Jedi, but then he said, he was reported to have said, he didn't want anybody else doing it. And he's now 86 or something, John Williams.
The one-off movies he didn't do. He didn't Rogue One, he didn't do.
Rogue One, no.
Yeah, and I'm assuming I don't think he's doing Solo either.
No, yeah, probably not.
It's a solo project. They've already got a guy. I did that the wrong way around. It would have been funnier the other way.
Well, I'm sure that they'll probably
fix that in the edit, would you, Lewis?
Yeah,
yeah.
Make that the right way around for me, and Dave's laugh at the end.
Yeah, make him sound good.
Yeah.
Somebody has to. I'm not in charge of the edit this time.
Is that what
Dave's always on the losing end.
Is that what you used to do to our shows? Make you sound good? Crikey.
It's a solo project.
Not anymore. Now I just got to get them out. Otherwise, this episode will be coming out just in time for the 2018 Christmas special, and we'll be reviewing
Happy
the 20...
holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Whatever year it is.
Exactly. Okay. Well, any more news items? We ought to move on, shouldn't we?
No, I guess. Well, there's a technical thing. Dave, I'm assuming you put it in for the cinematic look for Doctor Who.
Oh, yes. And the reason I put that in is because I was hoping they were going to go and make it in 4K. And they've not. They're just talking about new cameras. Again, this is Doctor Who News.
No, this is actually broadcast. You have to put a link into broadcast now. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. New filmic look for Series 11. Broadcast Magazine reports that the upcoming series of Doctor Who is being shot with a different cameras to give the series a new filmic look. But I thought what they should really have gone a step further, not do it in 16:9, but I don't know whether many of our listeners do have something like Netflix, but quite a lot of the Netflix TV series are not shot, shot in 16:9. The shot in a wider aspect ratio than that, you know, so you get the black bars top and bottom. But I think that's to give them longevity. I mean, who thought we'd be watching Spearhead in Space, as we said earlier, on Blu-ray? But the point is that the higher the quality of the content when you first, I mean, look at what was it? That's right, Dallas. Nothing to do with science fiction, I know, but Dallas, to save money, they went from filming it to doing it on videotape, and it looks awful.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that the original series now can be used for another 20 years. I mean, was it I Love Lucy was done on film, so it can still be used.
Right, yeah.
Lots of stuff like that. So it's expensive to do it, but I was hoping that they would do it on 4K. But anyway, at least they have gone for the highest quality cameras that they could justify. BBC have made a monumental leap there to enhance the look of Doctor Who, and I'm sure the fans will not be disappointed with the distinctly cinematic results that. And all they're talking about is a new lens. And, of course, as we all know, with a camera, the lens is the defining factor of the ultimate quality that comes from it. So I don't know that I'm happy about this news or not. I'm glad that they are making strides. We were talking about the Planet of the Dead, the leap to HD. One of the things I really enjoy with Netflix, and I'm sure Kyle will appreciate this when he's talking about the new Star Trek Discovery, the opening credits look absolutely fantastic, but the detail is so fine that if you're not watching it on 4K, you're not really appreciating the actual cartographic characters of those opening credits. When I watched House of Cards for the first time on 4K, it absolutely is fabulous. And, of course, the music is even better, although I do need a better system to enjoy that. So, yeah, new filmic look for Series 11 in a short nutshell.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to seeing, you know, what the new series brings as far as look goes, credits, you know, opening credits and music, sound, all that.
And, oh, just as an aside, Dave, we had that deal about you coming in and you know, while we were at work and knocking the TV over.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Could you get it done before Doctor Who starts up so I can get a 4K TV?
Yeah, sorry about that.
But I had the baked goods sitting out and all.
Yeah,
they're moldy now.
But not the, but you know, not the current episodes. Maybe 704 or however many episodes ago. Maybe.
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 Hint, hint,
so,
hint.
So these are in. Do I remember right? August. Is that when the new series is going to start?
October, I believe.
October.
Oh, yeah. As late as that, yeah.
And don't forget, the reason for the lateness is there's only 10 episodes.
Right, and it's got to end at Christmas. So, yeah.
Well, so, there's usually
so do we think
gap.
We'll have a Christmas episode, or will episode 10 be Christmas?
Wouldn't be Christmas without Doctor Who.
No, I hope not. I hope that's an 11th. But they're not as long as we thought. I think the first episode is 60 minutes, and I thought we were going to have 10 60-minute episodes, giving us 600 minutes, which is the equivalent of having 12 episodes at 48 or whatever. Somebody do the maths, but it's definitely... We've basically lost what, from 30, we had 13 episodes and a Christmas one, making 14. We're now down to, at the most, 11, maybe 12 in terms of time.
Yeah. Well, right now, anything's better than nothing, so we got to remember that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Put it this way, this episode of Podshot is going to last as long as Series 11.
Well, the new segment alone.
Yeah. Yes, we're moving on to 10 hours now. So yeah.
Right. Yes.
So,
if you're still with us, the world has come to an end.
Exactly. So, you are on one long commute.
Yes. So speaking of which, we're going to wrap up the new segment so we can get into... All right, well, we're going to release two episodes then. One will be news, and the other will be our review.
News part two, hey, news part three.
Why can't it be? Why can't it be?
Why can't it?
We can control time. We can control audio. We can say, it's two episodes.
That's the outer limits. That's what
I'm saying. Yeah, we control the vertical. We control the horizontal.
Don't get Dave talking about vertical and horizontal now.
Well, I'm vertical. Ian's horizontal. He's been on the whiskey.
Handsome.
All right. So
you're very handsome, Dave.
We'll continue this next week in TV tech. So we're going to take a break from, and then we're going to be right back with our feature segment, which is going to be, well, you guessed it, we're going to be reviewing Twice Upon a Time, or in this case, Four Times Upon a Time. All right, so we'll be right back with more Doctor Who Podshock.
Hi, this is Waris Hussein. Thank you for listening to Doctor Who Podshock.
Hi, this is Lee Shackelford reminding you that Doctor Who Podshock is brought to you by Audible. You've probably heard of Audible. Just in case, they are the world's leading provider of audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles. Let me say that again, 150,000 titles to choose from. Imagine a genre, they've got an audiobook in it. And these files play on iPhones, Kindles, iPads, any smartphone. In fact, over 500 different devices. Now, for fans of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free download when you start a new Audible subscription. You can choose anything at all from that vast library, but we know you'll want to get one of their delicious Doctor Who titles. They're performed for you by actors you know and love, wonderful voices, Tom Baker, Paul McGann, David Tennant, on it goes. Try it out for 30 days, and if at the end of that month you decide Audible is not for you, you still get to keep that Doctor Who book you downloaded. So let me put it this way, free Doctor Who book, right? So here's how to get started. Point your favorite web browser to audibletrial.com/podjock. That's Audible Trial, all one word, audibletrial.com/podshock. Pick your free book. You're going to love it.
And we're back with Doctor Who Podshock. In the Northern Hemisphere, we're about to enter spring, and we're a few days off from that. But a few days into winter, we got treated to Twice Upon a Time, which was the 2017 Christmas special. And here's a little bit from that right now.
Spoilers!
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, I should...
Thank you.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Again. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Kyle, wouldn't it be a Doctor Who Podshock without spoilers?
I may have had a little to drink, but the first one sounded a little weird.
Thank you.
It sounded a little... It didn't quite sound like Riversong. Oh, why?
Blame it on Skype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, So very Mancunian. Just.
Well, speaking of sounds, here's some sounds from Twice Upon a Time.
Nice an Arctic storm blowing out there. Come along, Polly, my child, my crew.
Please, Doctor, you've got the most fantastic wardrobe.
Yes. Don't know what we're in for outside there. Pretty soon we shall be having visitors.
So different. You've got no feeling.
I do not understand that, though.
Emotions, love, pride, hate, fear.
Have you no emotions, sir?
What's happened to you, Doctor?
I guess this old body of mine is wearing a bit thin.
Doctor, wakey wakey, it's all over now.
No. This isn't all over. It's far from being all over.
What are you talking about?
I must get back to the TARDIS. I can't go through with this. I will fight it. I will not change. Hello? Someone there? Hello? Who is that? I'm the Doctor. Oh, I don't think so. No. Dear me, no. You may be a Doctor, but I am the Doctor. The original, you might say.
And there you have it. Twice Upon a Time. And, you know, I know Lee needs to step away soon, so I'm going to give the floor, give the microphone to Lee to give his thoughts on this Doctor Who Christmas special. Again, this was last year's, or this couple months ago, or 3 months ago, whenever you listen to this Christmas special, which wasn't, you know, was a 13th a 12th, well, it was actually a first, 12th, and 13th Doctor story, in a sense.
There was, I heard someone observe when out there in social media, as we were waiting for the episode, somebody said 12 plus 1 equals 13.
There you go.
A nice summary of the episode. So. Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I guess part of what makes this show what it is that we're we seize on, you know, single things, and then we'll sit on them for a while. And before we, as we were getting ready to start recording, we were talking about the fact that the Doctor apparently has a secret liquor cabinet, and that we saw it in this episode, and then the five of us are trying to figure out, when has that been? Have we seen that before? Was that actually something that was going through the classic series and we don't remember it?
It does seem familiar.
Yeah. And I think Dave was saying earlier that it wasn't really until much later that we actually saw anybody pop one of those roundels out of the wall and, you know, do anything inside them. But I just got online and was looking about this to see if anybody else had thought about this. And somebody noted that in Ark in Space, the fourth Doctor serial, Sarah Jane passes out and Harry says, we should give her some brandy. And the Doctor says, go fetch his bottle from the TARDIS.
Oh, interesting. So, interesting.
I didn't remember that at all, but that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But that was, so we know the brandy bottle is there, but anyway. So yeah, but that is just an insanely small thing to focus on, but it interested me.
For medicinal purposes.
That's it. Yeah. And I know, you know, as a fan of Victorian literature, I know that brandy was sort of thought of as being the cure all. You know, no matter what's happened to you, you need a spot of brandy. So
I thought it was laudanum. Me too.
That's only when you're trying to get your kids to go to sleep at night.
Oh, right.
Well, I know there's a one episode back in the Hartnell era where, you know, you do see like a food dispenser where they do go and get something to eat or something like that in the TARDIS. And I know it's a longstanding thing that no one ever eats in the TARDIS. There's no kitchen or anything like that. But there was at one time some attention brought to that. So I'm sure
edge
there's...
Of
There's
Edge
a liquor
of Destruction,
cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that was an Edge of Destruction, yeah. And bless Bill for bringing up, you know, Where's the Bathroom, too. So.
Yes, yeah.
And the I don't know if it's a reference from Classic Who or not, or but certainly I knew who the bins always kind of mention, which I always made me laugh. That's, you know, right. third quarter on the right, just past the bins.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know what's in them. It's just...
Right. Well, no, it's the bins are the when you put your trash out.
Okay, so that's his recycling center, surely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's a British. It's the garbage.
You just, exactly.
Put the bins out. You know,
yeah, instead of garbage pail or trash can, it's bins.
Yeah. Cans out? It's that's what it is, and it always makes me laugh because it's kind of a very British kind of, you know, just down there, just past the bins, because somebody left their bins out. You know. So I always found that. Anyway, it's your floor. You take it.
Oh, and that makes me wish that I had given more thought to what I was going to say about this, because I haven't watched it again since Christmas. But I did. I just remember that I really did enjoy it a great deal. And I am a sucker for multi-doctor stories, or I always want to like multi-doctor stories. Discussing Who, we just looked again recently at the third doc, the three doctors and the five doctors, and I'd forgotten how terrible Five Doctors is. just can't stand it. And but you know, then you have the 50th anniversary special, which is, you know, the Day of the Doctor is just, I think, is sublime.
Yeah.
So, so you know, here, and apparently what's happened is we've figured out how to do it. And the two doctors. Yes, we also.
The two doctors. That's a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. And parts of that are brilliant, and parts of it are just really hard to take. So. Mm. But yeah, but I think as a multi-doctor story, this is fabulous. And I love David Bradley getting a chance to be the first doctor again, because yes. I loved him so much in Adventure in Space and Time.
I want to see, you know, after seeing this now for the second time, you know, this morning, I definitely have to revisit that again to see him in that.
Now, I saw this in the theater. Did any of you guys
no.
see it?
No. So I remember, it had a theatrical release. Now, this was broadcast on on Christmas Day, the 25th. It was in the theater that weekend after?
Yes, it was. So I held off. I did not see it on Christmas and avoided social media so we could see it in the theaters.
So how was that experience?
It was lovely to see it on a giant screen, of course. There was not, I have to say, I was disappointed because I also saw the Day of the Doctor in the theater with a huge crowd of enthusiastic fans, and it was a big party. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anything is going to be a disappointment after that. And this was just a bunch of people coming to see a movie, and, you know, the atmosphere is bad.
That demonstrous fan reaction wasn't there.
No, it was so really it was just and my wife and I both liked the fact that this theater had those giant reclining lounge seats, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, so can I just ask,
we were lying on our backs watching this on a big screen. Yeah,
was it shown as a standalone? Because I think with the other one they showed something else as well. Was this shown as a standalone?
We saw I remember that the in the ninth and tenth Doctor days we used to get what do you call that? What was their sort of behind-the-scenes feature that they would show?
Doctor Who Inside? No, Inside Doctor.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, they had a making-of, so we saw that before. And then there was sort of a retrospective about making it that they showed afterwards. So, and it was a lot of the same footage, so we were kind of like, yeah, we saw this. But anyway, but still, yeah, it was sort of like seeing the DVD with all the extras. It was, and one of the things that we saw in that, and I thought that was so interesting when I just heard the audio that you just played about it, was that they apparently shot and finished a lot more of recreating Tenth Planet.
Yes,
than ended up being cut into the show.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Now, speaking about, you know, what we just talked about movies and music, and then making decisions on the fly, they actually reshot the scenes from the 10th Planet in, you know, with David Bradley as the First Doctor and different actors playing Polly and Ben Jackson.
Right.
And they recreated the sets and all that, and they shot it, and then they decided, before broadcast opted for the original footage, you know, the original video that was shot back in 1966, and use that instead. But they shot all this stuff. It'd be interesting to see on iTunes they had a couple of those behind the scenes things as well, and they include some of that in it. But I would like to see the whole thing in complete
Agreed.
Form. Yeah.
Surely, when this comes out on DVD,
sure.
It could be. So I'm glad I got to see that, because I thought the recreations, they were so loving. The attention to detail was just astounding. And they talked about, I guess it was Stephen Moffat talking about, Mark Gatiss talking about how exciting it was to recreate the First Doctor's TARDIS. And that they had found the floor plans from 1963. So when people were saying, is that more or less accurate? They're saying this is accurate down to the millimeter.
Yeah. Wow.
Of course, I know they did it for Adventure in Space and Time as well, but I think that they built more of it this time. But in any case, there are these pillars that are sort of in the corner, these little decorative pillars. Mm-hmm. And Mark Gatiss, in that documentary, he said those are the same pillars.
Yeah. He said that.
But there was only one, I think, originally.
Yeah. That's right. So it's that one. But anyway, it's just like, of all things. And when we were talking about this on Discussing Who, Clarence said, so let me get this straight. The BBC will expend space to save that pillar from that, but they won't save the videotapes.
And he's right. And he's totally 100% right.
That's like a little question about how you're using your storage. But yeah, anyway, yeah, we've lost those, but we got that pillar, man. Anyway, but... So I loved all the interactions between the 12th and First Doctor, and just the fun of the idea that both of them are resisting their regenerations, and that they're going to have an experience that's going to persuade both of them that change is inevitable, change is good. And that's what I was hoping for, and that's what we got. I love Bill. I love Bill as a companion so much, but I love the glorious ending that the series gave her. So I was torn about her being back in this. I liked everything that she did in this, but I'm getting impatient with what I've started calling the boomerang effect about Doctor Who companions.
Yeah.
Is that you throw them away and they come right back again?
No, I don't call it the boomerang. I call that the Moffat effect.
Yeah. That's it. We'll call it the Moffat boomerang.
There you go.
So maybe, and it seems funny to feel that way. I mean, if you love Rose, then don't you want to see her keep coming back? If you love Clara, don't you want to keep seeing? Like, yeah, but
it diminishes their exit, you know. And I've been saying that, you know, for a while. I've been complaining about that in recent years, you know, where. They build up this great exit, and then next episode they're back.
Right. No, I remember you using the word diminish, and I thought that's it exactly. Is that I thought Clara's final sacrifice was glorious. That's a noble way for that character to end, and that has to be the end, or else it cheapens what she did.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, but anyway, still fun to have Bill there. Fun to have a farewell with Nardole as well, and.
What about the revelation of the soldier who enters the TARDIS?
That's one of those fan servicey things that I guess I saw it coming from 10 miles off. What did take me by surprise was that moment frozen in time is the Christmas Eve of the Christmas Armistice. Mm-hmm. I did not see that coming, and so I was weeping. I was just sitting in the theater weeping.
Yeah.
Because this is not science fiction, folks. Yeah, that really happened.
Happened 1914. Yep.
Yeah. Well, this is where I'm sure Ian wants to jump in and say things like history come into Doctor Who, like the Frost Fairs you were talking about, Ian, before from the other story.
Yes.
That you learn things.
Sorry, I was like Dave Jewell talking. Well,
but that was part of the concept from the very beginning, right? That's right. Why, yeah. You know,
it was going to be part educational, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It's one of those things that makes you... I guess there's enough information there. If you kind of looked it up, you'd be able to... But like the Frost Fair, all you need to do is Google Frost Fair. But yeah, placing something in something like that, and, you know, the kids turn around and say, that was really cool. Wouldn't it be nice if that would happen? It's like, well, it did. And there's an opportunity to educate a kid about the past, you know.
That's right.
Good point.
Yeah,
but the Frost Fair is a much easier get, you know. Because I had no idea, that's why Dave brought it up, I had no idea that these things even existed.
Yeah.
Frost Fair. So like that's, to me it sounded a bit sci-fi.
Right.
Oh yeah. For really the Thames freezes and they put elephants on it. Right. Nope. It happens. That's right.
Oh, one of those times when the most fantastic part is the part that's actually true.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's true in this episode too, isn't it? It's sort of like, oh yeah, and then the British and the German soldiers came out and they played football together. Yeah, they actually did. Yeah. That's Christmas, you know?
Yep.
So I don't know. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it and felt it was a wonderful conclusion to tie up the 12th Doctor's time. And then the moment that I had been holding my breath for came, and we got to hear, I think, confirmed that what we're going to hear from Jodie Whittaker is her native accent. So I was pleased by that.
Were you thrown out of the story at any point by the fact that you don't remember the first Doctor refusing to regenerate? I mean, do you feel as though that has thrown up a problem? I don't think so, because I think you talked earlier about the Day of the Doctor, and Kyle did it brilliantly before we were recording about the fact that. The War Doctor says, well, I won't remember any of this. I don't know whether Kyle wants to come in at this point, but...
I won't remember this, will I? I won't remember that I tried to save Gallifrey rather than burn it. But I suppose I could live with that, or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
That's it. And, of course, some people are saying they're rewriting the first Doctor's storyline. He never had this... dilemma about regenerating. And like him, would probably say the 10th Doctor, I've got so much more, you know, all this kind of thing.
The interesting thing about that is that I don't know if we had this discussion on the show or before the show. It's, you know, it's a big blur at this point.
Hard to tell now.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But I have a slight aversion to black and white Doctor Who, and so there are certain things I just hadn't seen. You know, I never got that far back in, like, because at the time they weren't screening on TV, so you had to buy a VHS. It's like, I'm sorry, I've got Colin Baker to buy first. You'll have to wait. So I hadn't seen the original episode, and so I got hold of it and watched it before the Christmas special, and it was really, I thought it was really well done, the way they merged one story on top of the other, because I think people were arguing about it after on the internet, as we do. And I'm like, no, if you watch them both, I think it's pretty seamless.
Yeah.
And it felt to me, the way the script is written and the way it was played, it felt to me that what we're getting is a sort of a something that happened off camera.
A bingo. Right. Exactly.
Is really how the Doctor felt. We just didn't know that until now.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was perfectly continuous. It's right. Great.
Yep. It's the missing episode that we didn't know was missing.
Well, it's the point of when they take him out of that thing that he was sitting in, that they do show that recreation and right. leaving them there and walking to the TARDIS before they come to the door and find him. So, I mean,
off they go. And then when he comes back, he's already in the TARDIS, because the next clip from the actual, you know, from the original story is them banging on the TARDIS door.
Indeed. In actual fact, it helps explain that story, because that's why Polly, Polly accepts him, the second Doctor, as the Doctor. Ben thinks, is this our man? Because they don't see that.
Right.
This, in a way, reinforces that, why there was this slight disbelief on their part.
Yeah, and they're banging on the TARDIS door to get in, and then they come in and there's this stranger laying on the floor. You know, I was
hoping that in Twice Upon a Time we'd see the second Doctor for a minute. Was anybody else thinking that it would be fun to have seen him just for a second?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I mean, we got to see his face change into him, and that was it. You know, the original.
The interesting thing is the 50th anniversary, the Adventure in Space and Time. There is deleted footage that you get on the Blu-ray of Mark Gatiss dressed up as the Third Doctor for filming. So he filmed footage of, like, I don't know whether it was like a regeneration or what, but yeah, he was all dressed up, because I believe he owns the coat, the Doctor's jacket.
He showed it to Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, and so yeah. Don't know where I was going now.
Well, let's get back to it, because Lee, I don't know how much longer.
Yeah.
What's your overall assessment of the actual episode, then, if we may?
Are we?
Yeah, he's pushing you out the door.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, the guy's
going.
Get out!
He doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to go.
Last oldest, please. Last oldest. I'm trying to clear up. I want to go home.
You remind me that when I came back to my family's house after high school graduation, I'm still wearing my cap and gown and everything, and my mother met me in the garage and said, "I just want you to know you'll always have a home here."
Like, even though you look silly in that hat.
Right. I was sort of like, I wasn't really planning on going anywhere. What are you trying to say exactly?
I'm going to live in the basement, Mom.
Yeah, I just, what do you mean? I'll always have a, yeah, I sort of took that for granted. Yeah, anyway, so yeah. I'm getting that feeling again.
I did that to one of my kids, and you're like, and Liam was like, "What? What do you mean when I move out?" He
wasn't planning on.
Like, I'm like, "Whoops, we took a step too far in parenting there." It's like, that's not supposed to happen for a while, and we just sprung it on him.
Yeah, just went right onto it. Anyway, no, I've forgotten what the scale is. Are we going to do a 5 out of 5 here? I would give this I give this a solid 4.5. There were things about the testimony storyline that I just didn't find interesting. I just sort of it didn't feel like a peril to,
like, an excuse just to get these two together, really.
Yeah,
right.
It did really feel like an excuse. It did, but I did love the reveal that there isn't an evil plan.
Yeah,
and the 12th Doctor sort of saying, "I don't know what to do about that." Yeah.
No, I like that aspect as well. You know, that it wasn't like fun. You know, someone just trying to take over the world or whatever. You know,
right? Yeah, the usual evil plan.
I also enjoyed the point that you know, something that I've always been making a point of. You know, that the Christmas specials don't have to be so overly Christmassy, you know, and this was an excellent example of that, where it was only at the end where they started singing Christmas carols this could have been any time of the year, you know, it didn't matter, but it's, I mean, you can have a Christmas feeling episode without having it to be, you know, snowmen and Santa Claus and, you know, all the icons of Christmas being inundated, you know, it doesn't, you know, you could just have a good story and then somehow tie it into Christmas with the feeling and what Christmas is about, and doesn't have to be, you know, so traditional, like, Christmassy.
Yeah.
There is good, and there is evil. I left Gallifrey to answer a question of my own. By any analysis, evil should always win. Good is not a practical survival strategy. It requires loyalty, self-sacrifice, and love. So why does good prevail? What keeps the balance between good and evil in this appalling universe? Is there some kind of logic? Some mysterious force?
Perhaps there's just a bloke.
A bloke?
Yeah. Perhaps there's just some bloke wandering around, putting everything right when it goes wrong.
Well, that would be a nice story, wouldn't it?
That would be the best.
But the real world is not a fairy tale.
You dash around the universe trying to figure out what's holding it all together, and you really, really don't know.
And that was the,
the
answer
like
to
that.
Bill's question about asking the Doctor, why did he steal the TARDIS?
Yeah, and Kyle likes that Quantum Leap clip.
And the thing I like about it is, well, I tend to look at it this way. It's a tip of the hat to Toby Haydock, the Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf. Well, for me, anyway, there's a line he has in there where he comes across this person who's pretending to like Doctor Who, and he asks him who his favorite is. He says, "Bloke with the scarf." It's just like some bloke.
I didn't know that. Well done.
Yeah, it's made sense in my mind. If it makes sense in your mind, I'd call a doctor because you may have it.
Yeah, I thought it was a good explanation. You know, and I should, you know, just briefly recap because we jumped into this review without doing it. David Bradley reprises, well, I shouldn't say reprises his role, but sort of reprises his role as the First Doctor. He played William Hartnell in Adventures in Space and Time.
Space and Time.
Yes, I was about to say Time and Space. That's why I always have to stop, because the acronym of the TARDIS. Okay, so, yeah, where he played William Hartnell, who played the First Doctor, and he's back again now playing the First Doctor in Doctor Who proper, and Mark Gatiss returns as the captain. Jenna Coleman has a brief cameo. So does Matt Lucas as Nordle, and Jenna was playing Clara, of course. It's written by Stephen Moffat and directed by Rachel Talalay, if I'm pronouncing her name right.
Yeah. Come on, Leigh, do it for us.
I thought that in that docu that everybody was saying Talalay.
Talalay, then.
It's Talalay, I think.
It is Talalay. Well, it's Talalay.
And also Toby Whithouse has a cameo as a German soldier.
German soldier, yeah.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So I thought David Brinkley is a totally different person. David Bradley, I think.
I loved his doctor.
very newsy.
And let me say this, since we were mentioning Rachel Talalay or Talalay, whatever we just said.
Oh, you say it.
The lovely Rachel.
Yeah, the lovely Rachel. It will be at Hulanta in May, so Leigh and I will get to meet her.
One of our questions will be, please say your last name.
How did you say your name?
Yeah. So you guys are going to Hulanta now, too?
Yes.
Hang on, we're on Breaking Bad now. Say my name.
Yes.
Dang, you guys are going to another convention.
Dang it.
you're welcome.
Because you guys are doing PetsCon next year. And I was like, okay, I'm starting plans for that. And you're like, who landed? I'm like, oh, Torn.
Yeah.
Because I went to one of the last Time Gates. I think it was the second or third to last Time Gate, and now it's Hulanta. Yeah, it was a great convention. It's a nice kind of regular convention, not one of those big budget.
Yeah, I prefer the more intimate.
Anyway, back to the review.
Well, I was just going to say,
Captain.
I think David Bradley did a great job playing the Doctor. He did it his, you know, he didn't try to imitate William Hartnell. He just did his own take on it. But, you know, I think he tried to capture the essence
evocative,
of him.
Evocative.
Yeah.
That's right. He evoked the first Doctor. Yeah.
And I thought he did a fantastic job. I mean, yes, there were some things that he did different, but he just had a good, this is the Doctor feeling, you know.
Well, he's physically a lot bigger, isn't he, than...
Yeah.
But I love how they explained that, you know. You're in mid-regeneration, yeah, aren't you?
And yeah, that could, you know, the reason why he doesn't exactly look the same as well, that could be an explanation for that.
Yeah. Your face is all over the place.
Yeah, your face is all over the place.
I think I'll use that one.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey.
That's weird. New teeth. Yeah.
So this was actually the second time I'm seeing it since it was actually first, you know, came out on Christmas. And it's, oddly, it was a few days into winter. Now we're a few days before winter ends. But I really enjoyed it much better, you know, this second viewing now. I think maybe my expectations were a bit high initially going into it. I mean, you know, here you have the classic First Doctor coming back and... it was, you know, it's Peter, the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi's last story. And so I had, you know, these big shoes to fill. And of course, it's the introduction of the 13th Doctor, the first 13th Doctor as well. Jodie Whittaker, right? Am I pronouncing the name right?
Yes.
It's fine, shrinking. I know I am, and I know Ian is, but I didn't know Lewis was.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my great pleasure to introduce Porky Pig onto the show.
Because I said Whittaker before, so I'm like, she took the wit out of me. Which, by the way, it's plainly like they shot those really. There was some separation between the Peter Capaldi and her scenes because in the Lee had mentioned that making of that Inside Doctor Who, whatever it's called, didn't have anything with her at all. It was all, you know, all that footage, all that behind the scenes footage had nothing with her in it because I think that was all shot before. Because even Peter in that behind the scenes says whoever takes over, whoever has the pleasure of working with you people after me are going to have a great... I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember what he said. But he said he didn't give a name. He didn't say when Jody takes over, you know, he didn't seem to know who it was either at that point. So they seemed like maybe they hadn't announced who the new person was at that point. So it's kind of interesting that there must have been a space of time that took place between those scenes. But anyway, I lost my train of thought. What I was saying.
Well, the interesting thing to tack on to the end of that is not long after this episode went out, they released a video of them dismantling
the
Peter's
set.
Yes,
yeah, there was a time lapse video, and it's just like, oh, we're getting a new.
Well, it exploded. It all went in fire at the end. You know?
Exactly.
But I mean, we're not getting, it's just slightly rejigged. No, they took that whole thing out. We're getting
something completely new.
I'm hoping something square.
Square.
Let's go back to some kind of squares.
That's right. Oh, and that's one of the things I wanted to say. Yeah, and I hope we'll bring back the round things because now we know that's where the liquor cabinet is.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, it seems
they could have a competition at the end of each show, like where you're gonna choose the money or the roundel.
Exactly, yeah. The roundel Carol Merrill is pointing to.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'll have number three. you got the liquor cabinet.
Well, you know how we have hologram. You know, we saw a hologram in Doctor Who before of. You know, going back, I think, to, like, the 9th Doctor and... because it seems like at the end of this episode, the 12th Doctor sort of... He's, like, walks around the TARDIS in the interior and, like, records, like, a message for whoever he's going to regenerate into. Because he's saying... He's sort of, like...
Giving advice to
him. Yeah, giving advice to him, whoever he is going to... So I'm wondering if you were going to see that shot that maybe from a different perspective of that, you know, so maybe this isn't going to be the last of it that we've seen of his TARDIS. Maybe she's going to somehow stumble into this and see this recorded message of Peter speaking to her, maybe.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Interesting idea, yeah.
Very cool.
It's just the hope that he'll remember it.
I think that's clip eight, your choice.
Okay. Here we go.
Clara.
Hello, you stupid old man.
Go back. You're in my head. All my memories. I'm back.
And don't go forgetting me again, because... quite frankly, that was offensive. Memories. Important, right?
I know what you're thinking. Where is he? Hello, sir.
When you're already dying, you're entitled to think that your day couldn't get any worse, but here you are. And both of you are here. How does that work?
We can be everyone. We are everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, this, isn't it? Now I'm all made of glass, not just my nipples. Yeah, they got my hair a bit wrong, though, didn't they?
You don't have any hair.
I have invisible hair. Got a suggestion for you, then.
Oh, there's a novelty.
Don't die. Because if you do, I think everybody in the universe might just go cold.
Can't I ever have peace? Can't I rest?
Of course you can.
It's your choice.
Only yours.
All right, well, that wasn't the exact clip, but...
No, it's the clip before, but it was important because they didn't actually revive. There were these locked memories, weren't they? So this is a bit semantic, but...
I had forgotten that he had forgotten about Clara, so it was like...
Nice.
Yeah.
I think that's going to make it less complicated for ongoing series that they don't have to think, oh... We can't mention Clara because he's forgotten Clara, but at least by doing this, they're going to make it easier for them in the future. Yeah, it's the final clip where he does that speech. But, Lee, any more from you before we dispatch you?
Yeah, just two other things very quickly. We didn't have any talk about in this episode about the first law of time or about why they can't interact with each other and why the Doctor can't cross his own time stream. So we just sort of put that to one side. But we should warn people to not mess with the first law of time. Righteous are those that follow the wisdom of Rassilon.
And at that remark, we're at 10 points to everybody. Yes. Enjoying the game.
This is a game
Rassilon.
I'm playing with
he who
the
wins and
he who wins and losing and wibbly wobbly.
He who wins shall lose, and he who loses shall win, or something like that.
Get so up on the side of the tomb.
Doctors, you chose wisely.
Yeah, good
I think
voice.
We've got the redheaded league in here somewhere.
The thing I want to say, well, as long as I'm doing completely personal things that won't make sense to anybody listening, I also want to tell Dave, in May, my wife and I are going to Huddersfield.
Oh, excellent.
It's a half an hour up the road from you. So,
come knocking on the door.
Well, what you want to do is also you can go to the Bronte house, not far away from there.
Really? Make sure you bring wine.
The thought had occurred to me. Yeah.
And do a Skype video call, because I want to see.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. So anyway.
We got to see that.
But yeah, we're always trying to. It's funny that the five of us, it's almost impossible to get us all in the same place at the same time. So any overlap, I think, is worth looking
at. Yeah,
wandering off at his age.
You never see Clark Kent and Superman in the same scene either, do you? It's strange.
We're all actually Louis Trapani.
Exactly.
Who is
I just do great voices. Multiple,
yeah.
We are his regeneration.
The rich little of my time.
That's incredible how you do that. Yeah. It can overlap them and everything. That's amazing.
All those Facebook profiles, too.
The time he spends on social media is just.
It's all relativity.
But no, this has been fun. I really great to talk with you guys.
Thank you, Lee, so much for being a part of the show.
Certainly. And I really, really, I did. I mean, I'm going to give if we're going to score it, I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5.
Woohoo!
So, woohoo!
absolutely love it. So Merry Christmas, guys.
Yes.
Merry Christmas. See you next time.
Happy
see
New
you
Year.
Sometime.
Exactly.
All right.
Bye, y'all.
All right.
Bye.
We're not going to... We'll wrap up things for all of us soon. I think... Kyle, yeah, I think you need to go as
Kyle,
well. So,
I'm going to have to go soon too. But I just wanted to first off that last clip that you played. You know, listening to that and that music, we were talking about Murray Gold actually leaving, and you know, and I agree, having someone come in giving a fresh take. Yeah, I think that's good. You know, from the music perspective, from the sound perspective. But that particular, you know, it's not a song, but the music that's playing in the background that they played when Bill was walking across, spoilers, you know, walking across the field, and now also in this scene and even into right before the regeneration. I was almost like getting choked up listening to the audio from that just a moment ago. That to me is the most hauntingly beautiful music, I think, that Gold did throughout this entire time he was on there. I used to think Vale Decem was like the thing that always got to me. But this one, just there's just something that is just immensely sad to me about that music. And mm-hmm. I really don't know why. But
well,
interesting.
Gold had, you know, he had a great run. He's been there since 2005. So it's, you know, it's been a long... I mean... there's nothing that to say that he can't come back. I can't see why, you know, why do we have to have just like one music composer? Why, you know, we could have like, he could come back for like an episode or two and then have someone else do an episode. They could, you know, change it up a bit. So,
But I'm not necessarily directing that comment toward him leaving. I'm just mm-hmm. saying that particular sound
exactly.
is just, it's just so, and it could be Bill. It could be all tied mm-hmm. to how much that character just affected people, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah.
So as far as what I thought of the entire story here, I loved seeing, you know, David Bradley as the First Doctor. I loved the interaction between him and, you know, the 12th Doctor. The Brigadier character or the Brigadier's grandfather character, I could have, you know, yeah, that was cool, but I don't think it was just that big of a part of the story. But I'm glad we got to see Bill again. I'm glad we got to see Nordle again. I agree with what Lee said. The whole testimony thing just seemed too easy. I even liked actually seeing Clara again. The only thing that I did not like, and I can't put my finger on it, I can't wrap it around my head, but the parting of the ways, the end of time part two, the time of the Doctor, everything since the Doctor has come back to, you know, TV in 2005, these regeneration episodes I have been obsessed with, and I can't figure out why I'm not obsessed with this episode. And it has nothing to do with Jodie Whittaker as being the next Doctor, the 13th Doctor, at all, 0%. The only thing that I think it might be, I do not like how at the end the TARDIS kind of rejected her or ejected her to somewhere she fell out. I know that's part of the story, but I'm just hearing these naysayers that in the back of my head that are complaining that, you know, Jodie Whittaker's, you know, the Doctor's going to be a woman now, blah, 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 blah. I'm just hearing these people go, oh, well, see, the TARDIS didn't like her. The TARDIS threw her out. And I just wish they hadn't have done that.
Right. Sorry, I've lost the word. The skeptical part of me says that that's all part of the plan to keep momentum going for the new series, to give people something to, you know, I mean, yeah, we've had a pretty big reveal, but there was a fair gap before we got to see her. And so, you know, just stoke the nerd fires, you know, show the TARDIS, like, because there's a definite kind of, it's not just the TARDIS tipping over and the Doctor falling out. It's almost this, you know, when you get something stuck on the palm of your hand and you're trying to shake it off. And it's that kind of motion where it's just like, get out. So I can see what they're saying, but I think we're kind of falling into the trap.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's not a trap. It's a trap I don't mind because it keeps people talking about the show I love. And if people are talking about it, people are watching it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I just wish, you know, my goodness, it's crashed the last two Doctors. It crashed one time, you know, literally in a child's backyard, and the other one time it went down the throat of a dinosaur. So, you know, I have no problem with it crashing. I just wish that it would have crashed with her in it because, again, I can hear these people going, oh, well, he didn't, you know, the TARDIS didn't want a woman in there. So, I mean, you know, that's just my take. But I did enjoy it, and I think I'll give it about the same 4.5 that Lee did. But that would be my only complaint is how that ending happened. I just didn't like that.
Fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've seen that. I mean, I don't know why, you know, we have to constantly have the TARDIS doing that, you know, because we've seen it, you know, like you just mentioned a few times already before. It'd be nice just to have a regeneration without the TARDIS interfering.
But they do this in a lot of series. I remember watching Smallville years ago, and there'd be an episode where the series had come to an end, and Lana Lang is in a crashing aircraft. Superman has gone off to his fortress of thing. Lex Luthor is possibly killed, you know, and this and that. And basically, they've spread the characters to the four corners of the world. How can they possibly get them back for the next series? Well, you'll have to watch to find out.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, as I said at the end, to be continued.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, I thought it was kind of neat when during Matt Smith's season he went from the big last copper monstrosity desktop to that round one, which I really kind of fell in love with. It made sense. But that was done nicely. It's like, but every time there's a regeneration and they want to change things up.
Yeah.
That seems to be the thing that they use. It's like, let's have a violent regeneration.
Clean the slate. Yeah. And let's start, you know, anew. Even here, we don't even have a companion, you know, bridging the gap. You know, there's just going to be.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole uproar with those that are pro and those that are con against the new Doctor and all that, I just say give her a chance. You know, it just gets, you know, I get tired of hearing all the naysayers and even the pro-sayers saying how, you know, if we just saw a little glimpse of her and I mean, I had no problems with her at all, but some of them were saying, you know, how awesome and spectacular she was. And okay, she wasn't bad. She wasn't, I mean, but we hardly saw her, you know, it was just a small little. So either way, you know, just let's give her a fair showing, let her, you know, do her thing and let's see it. And then we can say yay or nay. But I just get tired of both camps, really.
Right. Well, I think there's also this divide between people who, and Ian will probably want to comment on this, where, you know, an actor comes into the role of the Doctor. Do you want to watch him in the thick of it, or whatever he's done before, or the, you know, the Musketeers, whatever it was? Where Jodie, if you've seen her in some of the, well, she's been in with David Tennant, hasn't she, in that Broadchurch?
I guess that's one of the things that I haven't heard her say anything. What, there was one word, right? But it appears to be.
Hello.
Be kind.
Oh, this is a clip we should have showed before.
Doctor. I let you go.
Right? She said, brilliant.
Brilliant. It's funny, actually, because I watched it several times and missed it, a lot of it, because it's so quick. Yeah, but now that I'm not watching it and I'm just listening, I can actually, you know, because you're kind of like looking, because you're like trying to take in her, what does she look like? You know, what hair color?
Mm-hmm. Still not ginger.
So I'm not fond of her accent, but again, it's all a matter of betrayal and you know, at the end of the day, it didn't matter what Christopher Eccleston sounded like, you know.
Lots of places happened to us.
He still became very doctor sounding in his own way, and so you know, and it's a lot easier if that's her natural accent anyway, and so.
No matter how many times I listen to it, cannot hear the word brilliant there. And it may be my hearing or lack thereof.
No, it's not good. And I mean, I should be able to pick it up easily, but it's not that clear.
Ah, good. Then not that you can't hear it, but that makes me feel better.
Yeah, but like I said, when you just played the clip, that's when I heard two distinct, like, brilliant. It's like I had seen that's what she said. And so when I heard it, that's when I'm like, okay, that's where she says brilliant.
Yeah, I think I didn't think I comprehend what she said. I knew she said something, but I couldn't make out what she said.
Yeah.
See, I thought she said, Bryn. Now, that's what I heard was Bryn, like B-R-I-N, Bryn. Bryn.
It's definitely brilliant. But they run into one another. I think what it was is the fact that she'd been secretly brought onto set to do it. So they didn't do like lots of takes on it. They were trying to get her in and out before anybody saw her, sort of thing.
Right.
Perhaps, yeah. Well, I know the first time I saw it, one of the negatives I had were, not so much of a negative, but just off-putting was and I know the original series was in the 60s and we had a different sensibility back then, but it just seemed like if they just had maybe like one or two jabs of the Doctor being a little sexist, that would have been okay. But it just seemed like the first time watching it, it just seemed to like... press too hard on that. You know, they seem to play the joke a little bit too much. The second time watching it, maybe because I was expecting it already, it didn't rattle me too much. But maybe because we have, you know, we look at things through our own rose-colored glasses, and I don't really see the First Doctor being that way so much. But here in this episode, he just seemed very, you know, they seem to be like, you know, emphasizing that a bit more than they probably needed to.
I think you're right. I think they did it more from the Adventure in Space and Time, where maybe not how Hartnell was, but how he was portraying that. Because, like, when he says something like, oh, it needs cleaning, you need Polly in here or something. Well, mm-hmm. he would never have said that to Polly, the doctor.
Yeah.
But from the Avengers in Space and Time, you got the feeling that Hartnell may have said that sort of thing. Yeah. I'm not saying he did, but that would... So I think that there's a bit of cross-referencing there on the actor of his time and the doctor of this series. And there's a bit of a cross-linkage there that didn't work. I think you're right to be upset by it.
Yeah. You know, if he at the end he came out and, you know, because Bill said us, and he says, you know, if you keep on speaking like that, I'm going to spank you on your bottom or something like that. And I just can't see the first doctor ever saying something like that.
Well, I mean, one way of looking at it, well, a nice way of looking at it, is that they're showing the difference between between the first doctor and the 12th doctor, because normally, I mean, in a lot of the multi-doctor stories, the smart one is the first doctor.
True.
And when you think about it,
you shouldn't.
Why is that? He's the one who's behind the times. Mm-hmm. He hasn't figured things out yet.
Yeah.
So you could say it was kind of an artistic way of showing the difference between the two. That's something Peter Capaldi's doctor would never have said, you know. So, because, I mean, look at the three doctors. They keep consulting with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the first doctor comes in and takes charge because he was first. But all the others have been through so much more and gained so much more experience. Shouldn't really work that way.
Yeah, Aaron, the fifth, the five doctors, the third doctor says, excuse me, Brigadier, I better go over there so they'll make a mess of it without me, you know.
Right. Yeah, so it's, and it's like even the five doctors, the one who figures out the riddle.
Well,
it's,
I mean,
the first doctor.
It's the first,
sort of tie it all together. Everyone's a sum of their memories, and Bill is, and that's what she was saying in this era, that I'm really Bill because I'm the sum of my memories, and you know, the 12th doctor is the sum of all his vast memories of all 11 doctors before him. You know, right. He should be more progressive where he's at than the first doctor.
Right. So, yeah. In a nutshell, it's a way of showing the difference between the first and the... Yeah. We just took the long route.
we took the long way around.
Yes.
Yeah. So Kyle's made... Give this thing.
Did you give a TARDIS drone? Yeah, you
did. Yeah, four and a half.
Anything else to add before we perhaps see what Ian thought?
No, I think I'm good. And if you guys don't mind, I'm going to have to dematerialize out of here to I've still got. I'll just tell you what I've got to do. I am on an exercise binge, and I have not enough. Total steps for the day, and it's 10:42, so I have a quota to meet.
I hear you. I'm behind on mine too today.
So having said, and
it's 11:42 for me, so I don't have time to get my Apple Watch was giving me recommendations to go for a 30-minute walk about a half hour ago.
Okay, well, just so you feel better, my Apple Watch has been dinging me too. So, and the only reason I'm leaving is because I have not, since January the 1st, missed one of my days.
You got to close your rings. This is the first day I'm not closing my rings since I had the flu in the beginning of February.
See, just so you know, folks out there in podcast land, when the closing of the rings happens, they receive a sharp electrical shock.
When you don't close the rings. That's when you penalize.
Are dispatched to make sure they go on a run. There's nothing to worry about.
And
robot overlords are here to help.
I thought this podcast ended when I finished my wine.
No. So to prevent my watch from attacking me with electrical shocks, I do have to close my rings.
Well, thank you, Kyle, close my rings while you're at it.
I shall.
I have to travel to your time zone just so I can close my rings now.
Exactly. All right. Well, I beam on over or materialize or however you need to.
Absolutely.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen. Have
Take
a good
care.
One.
Bye. Hey, what?
And now, then there was three.
I think it's your turn, Ian.
My turn? What?
Well, I don't really want to go through any particular scene, so I just want to give an overall view.
Overall, and just kind of how excuse me.
Me, 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 me.
Sometimes things get better through discussion, mm-hmm. like this, and yeah. it's like the more we've looked at it, there's more to appreciate. I think once you get kind of, you know, this is an advertisement for podcasting and fandom. It's like it's great because you get to hear other viewpoints and how people view certain scenes. Like I view the tip of the hat to the Brigadier at the end. And I'm sorry from Stephen Moffat for turning his dead body into a Cyberman earlier in the series. That's the way I look at it. I'm sorry I did that, Ian. Here's a nice tip of the hat to the Brigadier. Mm. Not a zombie one.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's gotten better. I mean, I'm going to have to agree with the other guys. It's 4.5. It is a bit flimsy on the whys and wherefores, and it's a flimsy way they got in there. It seems very cheap, but it's also nice to have we were just cleaning up over here. We're just the servants of time. We weren't really kind of doing anything bad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice. Go about your business then. Sorry to have bothered you. It's kind of neat to have a moment like that in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Like, if you hadn't noticed this, you know, if you guys hadn't been going through your regeneration crises, you know, this wouldn't have been a problem. So it seems good to it reminds me of I forgot the name of the episode. It's the Are You My Mummy?
I just lost it.
We're all experts, folks.
Yeah.
Give us a
empty child. Yeah, I was like, child's, yeah. child's in
empty
there
child,
somewhere.
Empty child, doctor dances. Yep, empty child, doctor dances.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that. It's like we get that interesting moment in Doctor Who where at the end everybody lives, nobody died, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was fixed at the end. There wasn't a dead guy anywhere.
Yeah. And the captain was sort of like fixated on, you know, I know I have to, you know, my, you know, I had a good run, you know, and he was sort of like prepared to die before, but now after
right.
spending the time with the doctor, that feeling was no longer there. And he felt that this, you know, his, you know, he was just gonna, you know, his ultimate end was coming soon. And then that didn't turn out to be the case.
Right. But yeah, I think I've rewatched this one. I think I rewatched this before I had to. Because we watch it as fans, you know, when it comes out, and generally for podcasts, you know, I'll watch it right before we do a Cultum or a Podshock or just to kind of refresh our memories. Mm-hmm. This one, I watched a couple of times before I had to, before like we reviewed it on Cultum. And so it hasn't happened in a while. A lot of the episodes haven't been great. It's just special ones you revisit. When David Tennant appeared on the scene, in the Christmas special, that was a spectacular open. And my son and I watched it over and over again because he thought it was brilliant. And especially when the Doctor like sat up in bed with the sonic screwdriver at the whirling Christmas tree. Awesome. It's a nice one to kind of just go back and watch, because it's really kind of a window into the Doctor. And like I said, this old crotchety dude that, appears to know it, everything, is really kind of, in a way, a bit of a teenager in mm-hmm. comparison to all the others, It's just that bratty kid that always thinks he knows best. You don't tell him when he's had a good idea because it goes to his head. But he knows what the brandy is. Because he snuck it on board in the first place, Like, got to keep it his good side. Just imagine Tom Baker, excuse me, where's the brandy? Behind the first Doctor's back, Who said that, He ducks out of the frame. You just added a whole sequence of multi-Doctor stories.
Yeah, I'm seeing it in my head visualizing it.
If Doctor's kind of, they're doing something important to the console and there's another Doctor in the back of the frame, opening up a roundel, looking at it, and then closing it and vanishing as the other Doctor looks up, misses it completely. Maybe a great comedy bit before, the opening act for Doctor Who now.
Absolutely.
Doctor Who, the brandy game, available on your mobile apps shortly.
I think it's time I took over, I think it's time it is on console.
Go for it, Dave.
Yeah. Are you saying my safe word, Dave?
Yeah, indeed.
Safe word. You've been a lovely audience. But no, it's 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Okay, well, I'll be pretty brief because we are running rather long. I enjoyed this story. David Bradley, I think, was great casting in the part. I like the way I must say that I know some people criticise Stephen Moffat, but this, I think, is one of his well-crafted things. He's tied up a lot of loose ends.
Dave, a point we forgot to mention to this whole episode of Doctor Who Podcast is that not only is this the last episode of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, it's Stephen Moffat's last run as executive producer. So this is the end of his era as well as the 12th Doctor's era. But go ahead.
Indeed it is, and we'll be talking further to that point somewhere else in a couple of weeks. But yes, the storyline, I think, is really well done. The only thing I have about the Peter Capaldi Doctor has not been the fact that he isn't a great actor, but he has been had all this navel gazing because, of course, we go back to the Matt Smith's Doctor, the 11th Doctor, his time on that planet Christmas, and he's 600 years, he sends Clara home and Clara jumps back on the TARDIS and he's assumed that he's at the end of his regenerations. The crack opens, the energy comes through, he vanquishes the Dalek fleet, and then suddenly we're in unknown territory for us as an audience, but for the Doctor in terms of, is this one new generation he's got, or has he got infinite regenerations or whatever, and so on. And then we had what to me seemed a rather long gestation period of this Doctor of Am I a Good Man? So although Peter has done stalwart work in being, you know, doing his three seasons or whatever, I do feel as though it has been a transitional Doctor, this Doctor. And they also had, as you say, with Stephen Moffat leaving, and we're now going to have a new showrunner, we're going to have a new actor or actress playing the Doctor, we're going to have a new theme, we're going to have new technical innovations taken to the way that the image is portrayed and the actual cinematography of it. I do feel that that's added a lot of weight to what's happened. We also, I think, Lewis, can also add in that Missy is now going to leave Doctor. Do we not? Is that been confirmed? I don't think.
Yeah, I think
the
I
actress
heard about
is
that.
Coming
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
I don't think the actress is coming back to that role. So it's a complete reset. We're almost back to 2005. It's mm-hmm. that bigger thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, indeed. I'm a bit disappointed that they're going down to the 10 episodes. It wouldn't have been so bad if they were being 60-minute episodes. It doesn't seem with 10 episodes you can have too many of these two-parters, although, in fact, with the series that we've just had, I think they really cheated a little bit with the three-part with the monks. That almost, to me, sounded a little... They'd stretch things out a little bit cause to make the budget go further. But as an episode on its own, I think it's a pretty good episode. It's a good finale to the series. Although, like Lee said, it was disappointing that the deaths of Clara and so on were undermined. The deaths of Bill Potts, mm-hmm. you know, the Cyberman was undermined. At least that was sort of minimised to some extent by what you said. They're coming back here as memories, not that they're reinstated as full living companions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, I enjoyed it. The acting was superb. And it was... and it also... I know some people said it rewrote the history of the Doctor, but I don't think so. I think the first Doctor's memory would have been readjusted when he left this story, and I think it can, you know, the timeline can be maintained and yet have this continuity reinforced.
Exactly. Yeah. They set them in the episode itself. You know, they set that their memories are erased. You know, that they weren't going to have any memory of it.
Yeah, so I'll definitely give it a solid 4 out of 5, and maybe a little bit more.
Okay, very good. I'm with you, Dave. I'm giving it 4 out of 5 TARDIS groans, and I really enjoyed it more today than I did. I mean, not that I didn't like it that first time around, but I just think my expectations were so high that it just kind of fell shy of where I was expecting it to go. And but seeing it now, I really appreciate it for what it is, and I enjoyed it. I think a lot more on the second viewing, and definitely, will, you know, this is one that you're going to watch again and again, just like Ian was saying. And like I said, my initial like complaint might have been just it was I think they could have just done one or two joke about the times of the 60s compared to today and how we treat women differently today. I just thought they went on a little bit too much. They kind of went, you know, to the well too much on that one. And but other than that, I think it was nicely crafted. Technically, done excellently. The acting was casting was great. So really no complaints there. I agree again with Lee that as far as testimony was that was was a little thin, you know, it wasn't really fleshed out too much, but I think that it's purpose of existing was really just to bring these two doctors together, and along with Bill and the captain, and see how they all interact with each other. But
and to reinstate Clara's knowledge back into the
Doctor. Yeah, which I sort of, you know, I didn't really think that was a big deal, but I can appreciate how that might come into trouble later on in the series. You know, just like we go back to the five doctors. How did you know how did Jamie remember the Doctor? Because his memory was supposed to be erased, and yet he remembered, you know, so tying up some loose ends there. But I had forgotten that he had forgotten her, you know. So, it was a nice little tying up loose ends. So, and it was good seeing the Doctor, the original Doctor, and seeing the original TARDIS and the interior. They did a spot on job at that, and so no complaints there. I mean, it's be interesting to see the shot stuff they did of the reshot of the I just lost the episode name. The tenth planet.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's the thing, is like, in order to make those transition pieces work, you kind of gotta shoot the whole scene and then figure out where you can drop one footage and on the other. You know, there's no point just doing, okay, stand there for 10 seconds and we'll, you know, we'll pick it up right. You know, so. That'd be kind of cool to see. Yeah,
according to the director, they reshot everything like in the 60s style, and they mounted the cameras so it looked
really
like the
good.
like back in then they had those big fixed mounted cameras, so they kind of shot it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good. I my hat's off to, you know, just Doctor Who. You know, that TV show. Mm-hmm. Had, you know, a really good stab at, you know, something like this, you know, because normally on TV you get, you know, okay effects. I mean, it's gotten better as, you know, as the effects have got better and cheaper, etc. But yeah, I, having watched the original episode, you know, right before this was really good too, and it made me appreciate them both even more.
Yeah, it makes me want to watch the 10th Planet again.
Yeah, they end up being kind of like a pair. You know, if you're gonna watch this, well, then you're gonna watch. You know, if you're gonna watch 10th Planet, well, you might as well watch. You know,
this. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, that was Twice Upon a Time, and I want to thank everyone for participating. And listeners, what do you want to, what do you want to say about this episode? We welcome your feedback. Once again, you can always send feedback to feedback@podshock.net, and we welcome that. Our site right now is currently down, and we need to... bring that back up, and there's some scripting that it's causing some problems, and I haven't been able to track down exactly what it is. I have some speculative thinking where the problem might be, but it has to do with reinstalling software, and it's just been a big project that I just haven't had time to kind of carve out and do yet, but it is on my agenda. So hopefully our site will be up and running again. In the meantime, our episodes will be available, as far as websites go, on arttrap.com. And, of course, you can find us at your various places where you find podcasts, you know, iTunes and whatnot. And to that point, don't forget that Dave and Ian have their podcasts, the Cultum Collective. And is that every Sunday?
No, we're doing it on... monthly at the moment. We're too old.
Sorry, I know the feeling now.
Yeah, our last episode 338 was Doctor Who the Capaldi Years, and the last Sunday in this month we were going to be doing about the Stephen Moffat era. And since Kyle and Lee aren't here, they're discussing Who. They're up to about episode 93. six or seven already, and
it's not a race, guys. It's not a race. It's not a race, you know.
No, just
slow down, dear. Slow down. It's not a race.
Yeah, and Lee Shackelford, of course, did that audio drama with Relativity podcast.
Yes. Yeah, so catch them all. And we will be back. I can't say exactly when, but hopefully not the span of time that took between this and the last episode. I apologize for that. And I take the most of the blame. Yes.
Time will tell.
Time will tell, as always. So thank you for listening. And so until next time, cheers, everyone.
Bye.
You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented to you by the fan-run GallifreyanMC.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This podcast is also supported by the Podshock Podcast Companion app, now in the iTunes App Store. Visit arttrap.com for more information on this and other podcasts.
We're at the South Pole.
Of course we are. Don't you know that?
This is where it happened.
Where what happened?
This is it. The very first time that we regenerated. You're mid-regeneration, aren't you? Your face, it's all over the place. But you're trying to hold it back.
What do you know of regeneration? Are you a Time Lord?
You know who I am. You must.
Have you come to take the ship back?
The ship? You still call it a ship?
Oh, dear. What have you done to it? Nothing. The windows.
I don't remember this.
The wrong side.
I don't remember trying not to change.
Sure it's
not
changed.
Back then.
I mean, look at it. It seems to have expanded.
Well, so those years are bigger on the inside. You try sucking your tummy in that long. Why are you trying not to regenerate?
I have the courage and the right to live and die as myself.
Too late. It started. A few minutes ago, you were weak as a kitten, right? Now, you're fine. We're in a state of grace, both of us. But it won't last long. We have a choice. Either we change and go on, or we die as we are.